Right, this is going to be another episode of the Best Damn League Show. Obviously, I am foreign. That is not Dom. Who is playing the role of not Dom this week? It's actually Zabatine, who, if you remember, if you go all the way back, he was the first person to not be Dom on this show. So welcome back, not Dom, here to give opinions that definitely aren't Dom's in your own inimitable fashion. I actually will say, Zabatine, I've noticed. This is one thing I'll take credit for it myself, even though you did all the work, classic style, which is... I actually do think, even though when you first started doing talk shows, a lot of people I do think hated on you because they didn't think you were a good coach, or I don't know, maybe they thought Immortal sucked or something like that. And also they knew the whole thing of like Ica and all that stuff when you were defending him, etc. I actually think you've grown on people, mate. I think you've sort of, they get you now. They seem to dig it. Like, I think they actually like your takes, etc.
Yeah, it usually takes me quite a long time to get approved by communities, no matter who they are. It takes I need to, you know, the disclaimer is pretty long, like the little lines at the entrance. Yeah, right. they're pretty long, but I mean no harm whatsoever, and I think eventually people realize that. Yeah, but yes, thanks for the compliment.
I also will say as well, one thing I think you're actually pretty good at is, if people don't know, a lot of analysts, it's actually very, it's funny because people think my style's hard because you walk in the line of like being edgy and sometimes you like disrespecting people, but then at the same time you're trying to like be as serious as well. That's quite tough to do. But at the same time, it actually means it's quite easy to be entertaining if you do that style. You can always have an interesting value. Like, even if people hate on you, that becomes a reason to watch, right? Actually, I think your style's actually quite tricky though, because in general, I notice you are one of those people who tries to, even if you sort of like downplay or criticize somebody, you try to do it in quite an elegant fashion, I would say. You try to like put a lot of nuance in there and make it like you're not as blunt as me, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, because I've been in the shoes of the people I'm criticizing, and I know that it is very like the results are objectives, but you have none of them when you make the decisions.
Yes.
So I've learned to become more accepting of the fact that people will go for the choice that seems the easiest to take on the table. And I will criticize that because I think that having the step back and being able to see a bigger picture is one of the skills that's required to become better, you know? But at the end of the day, like, you can't just shoot at someone who has, if you had made the same mistake in their shoes previously. So,
oh, true.
I softened myself.
True.
I softened myself a lot after the coaching experience.
Yes.
Being 10th in NA.
Oh, right. You mean if I went back and I brushed up on my French, I listened to some OTP before you were a coach, you might be a bit spicier on that broadcast, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was saying things were like coach decisions, drafts were stupid, players were bad.
Yes.
And then eventually you work with players and you realize like a lot of them think at least they do the best for themselves, even though they don't, but they think they're doing it. And so you have to respect the effort.
Yes.
Right. I try for everyone who I'm criticizing to respect the effort and the intent and judge just the decision and the result and not the person.
Yes, I will say one thing I think I've always actually been, one area I'm usually kind of is actually draft. I always say I will at least give the benefit of the doubt to most coaches that they did think they drafted the best champions available at that moment and the best comp. And maybe it's just the case that I don't know what the last week of scrims was like. And or maybe the star player refuses to play the pick I want. You know what I mean? Whereas I will say, if you veer into the world of the LSs and Doms, they're a bit more like blunt themselves on those ones. And then they're not necessarily as forgiving always, you know?
Yeah, Dom shoots like he don't miss, you know.
No, he shoots with a machine gun, mate. He just fires everyone. Yeah, yeah.
I'm on his stream and I'm watching. You know, I was watching his review of Carmine.
Oh, of course,
because I need an external perspective, and we'll probably talk about that on like what the outside of the French like speaking world thinks about the Carmine adventure. And yeah, he don't miss. Like he is like. Yeah, it's like Yamato died for that. it's completely like diverse approach just help people probably grasp the truth. I'd say for a bad draft, I think it's one of the best example of collective hallucination, like a short-term collective hallucination. A bad draft can be that's like, oh guys, we're going to be so good. We're going to draft this Kog'Maw. We're going to be so great. And like destroyed in 15 minutes. And it's like, oh. I think we'd probably aim wrong in this one. And it's always funny.
Speaking of looking at the bigger picture, if you look at my picture now, you will see I'm wearing a lovely t-shirt. First of all, you can even see from the quality of the material, it's not like one of those like starchy t-shirts. It's a beautiful Into the AM t-shirt, which is one of our sponsors here at Last Free Nation. And I will say as well, obviously me and Monty picked a bunch of different ones. I tended to go for more of a sort of, you know, like this is like a sort of Japanese pastoral sort of art thing, you know, it's kind of a bit serene, a bit cool. Because I actually do think I quite like, as I've grown older, which I kind of like, you know, more chill vibes. I'm not trying to get all the attention. I'm not trying to have some big metal t-shirt with a big skull coming out on a bike, chopping someone's head off with an axe. Yeah, when I was 14, that was what I wanted. Now, yeah, I want something that just looks, because what's cool about this, you'll know the Sabatiers, if I actually went to a restaurant and I was wearing like a blazer and trousers, I could pull off the smart casual, you know, it doesn't look tacky. And so what I like about this, the intent t-shirts is, first of all, I've washed these a few times and they haven't done the thing that most like print t-shirts do, which is they immediately lose all the loveliness of the cotton and become all like horrible. And like even the, you can even see the black usually fades to like a semi-gray. I mean, that hasn't happened at all. It's kept all the loveliness of the fabric. None of the design is cracked either. It's not one of those ones where it's printed on. It just starts to do those lines. It's all stayed lovely. So I'm actually very happy with this. If people don't know, it's not just a regular sponsor eat here. As of the 28th of March, running until the 3rd of April, they have a site-wide sale. So it's not just this. You can get any type of print t-shirt. They've got other all different other types of apparel. And it is 25 to 80% off if you use the link in the banner there. www.intotheam.com/LFN. So instead of just getting a small percent, you get 25 to 80% depending on items, obviously. I would highly recommend it. Check it out. Right. If we're going to get into it, let's just start the obvious place, right, Sabatine? Being as on all these episodes when we began in winter, one of the topics that has obviously dominated discussion for good and for ill is Carbine Corp, obviously. And then the fact that now they've just done two splits in a row in 10th place, which is, I mean, I've got to say it, that's one of the worst starts to the LEC anyone's ever had. They've won four games, guys. Like, what do you want? Like, that's inconceivable. What's crazy is, I even thought they'd win more games this split, Zabati. I thought they'd win more, like, you know, four or five, and they'd be in the playoffs, and then maybe in the playoffs, you know, they could win, like, one best of three or something. Like, I was kind of giving them a chance. I was figuring some things would level up. The place I'd start is here is, mate, I feel like not much changed from last split. What's weird is they had all that time between the splits when they weren't playing the playoff portion. They kicked out the Yamato pretty quickly, remember? They kicked them out immediately after like week three, basically. And then they had all this time with the coach, who I will add, people forget this, was already there and has been with the team in the past. It's not like he's a new person. He was there anyway and they promoted him essentially. And so I would have hoped at a minimum, like I'd see like big player change, like someone either got better or they changed how they play in the team. I actually feel like, even though I could see on paper, here's what's weird. Because they won their games before, it didn't count, unlike the last split. People are going to think, well, it's actually, you know, this is better than last split. I actually, Monty had this take. I don't think it is. I think a lot of the problems look the same. And the reason why I don't think it's actually better is, even though they won the two games earlier this time, Zabatine, the difference is, when they were losing the games in the winter split, they actually, the first few weeks, had loads of games they were in. They felt like most games they were in. This time, I actually thought they just got blasted a lot more as well. Where are you at on Carmi in this split?
You know, there are projects that get destroyed. Like, they don't pass the first, how to say, like the
first hurdle
at the beginning, it's never going to recover.
Sure.
I think with the amount of expectations, the amount of pressure, the amount of storylines that have been put on the names of the players, I think that if it works, it's fine, you know, but I think people like Seiken, for instance, have been so upplayed over the years as like, someone who will do not only good, but great in the LEC. A lot of the warnings from experts have been dismissed by the community of showing them. If you just try to compare, and I've done the comparison on Twitter, I think yesterday, of who were their opponents in LFL and EMEA Masters versus who are their opponents during the LEC. I think that people, you know, it's a dismiss red flags, you know, situation where you build like unrealistic expectations about your players and it becomes like a weight in their backpack for the whole season. And I think that not only that, but the choice of going with a carry jungle plus a carry ADC, which both positions require the presence of the support, with a support that has a kind of a silent profile, you add on that the bad starts, the change of the coach. It's really like all in, you know. It's you're playing Russian roulette pretty much, going in the second split that way. If it does work and you don't die on the first bullet, you have a real chance of bouncing back. But since they had a pretty bad schedule and they lost their early game, even though they gave it a fight, I think that then the nerves builds up. You're like, oh, we lost to Fnatic, we lost to G2. Now we're like 0-X. We need to bounce back. One bad game is all it takes. One bad game is all it takes to switch back to the we're never going to make it. And after the first week, it felt like the players were still trying, but didn't know how to fix their mistake. And there was this kind of break between how Bo thinks the game and how he postures in game and how his teams like behave around him. And the third week, like you clearly saw that the you know, the divorce was already there, right? Like there was no play, no proactive play. Everybody's just walking around the map. People like, there's sometimes, you know, it's so painful that you just want it to be over no matter what the cost is. And this is really how I felt watching Carmine in the last week. So from now on, and I do understand like all the parameters that led to this. And I think it's unlucky. It's kind of unlucky, but at the same time, you build a system that has a lot of risk in it. And so it can explode pretty fast. I think that moving forward, they need to make change within the players, because I don't think that the guy that tells them that they need to drop this ward at this timing, or the people who organize screams, or the people who does the review with them, is not going to help them become better on stage. Like, there is a problem among the player on stage, and you need to be extremely delusional not to see it. Like, there is a point where it's very clear that when Bo does a move and you see Seiken or you see Targamas not moving, when you see Bo not going for a play and see his three teammates like going in, either you go for Bo, either you go for the three former guys or some of them, but you can't keep this recipe because it fails, right? You've baked the cake twice and it has been a disaster. You have to change the recipe.
Yes, I will say that's also why, even though most people have obviously gotten past the Yamato topic, this is another reason why I'm actually salty about that move still, Zubatin. Because if you've literally been a coach, you know this. The biggest problem is the implication of that move was like, right, we've seen everything Yamato can do, give someone else a go. And to me, it's like, no, but he could have built on what he didn't do or what didn't work or hadn't yet worked. Like, because as you're saying, if the problem, and I think you're absolutely right, like, it's why it's amazing to me actually that you're allowed to hear the comms from these teams. Like, well, I'll just say this, guys, it's kind of weird to me that we get to have the comms from all the 10th place teams like XL last season, because if anything it will redeem like one or two players, but it absolutely destroys the ones who don't talk, who have terrible comms. Because the difference is, before we'd all be speculating which ones is it, maybe, like, for example, if we never heard the comms, you could think, for example, maybe Targamas does a call, but they just don't follow up with him, or they don't know what he's doing, or he tells them back off, like, I'm not ready to go in. Or maybe Sakan says, like, hey, like, you know, I'm going to, like, time, I'll tell you when to do something, and then they didn't do it right, so he didn't get to do his ult or something. The problem is, when you listen and you know that's not what's happening, and in fact, sometimes the opposite, they're the ones not doing what's said, or not joining in, or not listening, or seeming like they can't come, it's a killer. So one thing I would ask you is this: even though I don't necessarily shit on the current coach they have, I actually think in some ways you just put him in the same position of square one of where Yamato was. Like, yeah, he was there in the background, but like, does he just change everything? If he changes everything, he started at square one again. If he's building on it, well, how's he going to build on Yamato's plan without being Yamato? You know what I mean? Like, to me, this is why I still think the silliest thing was I do think they just did it to have a scapegoat for fans, mate. I think that's why they did the Yamato firing. It was to not have to fire a player and to not have to just do nothing, to seem like he did something, right? And the reason I bring this up is, to me, if you'd have done Yamato and he'd done the exact same thing, he won two games, he'd come 10th again, now is when you fire him. And if you fire him now, Zabatine, I wouldn't even complain. I would even say, look, I might like not like some of the players, but I'd say, hey, you know what, at the end of the day, this obviously wasn't the right coach for them. How about that angle? You know what I mean? Because I'm with you. Some of this stuff is like, it's clearly in the match that they just don't have the synergies and they don't understand what they're doing. And I refuse to believe they play like this in scrims as well. So what were your thoughts on, should they have kept him out, or do you mind on that angle? Is that not an issue for you? Where are you at on that?
I mean, it's one of the hardest, especially outside of the French-speaking League of Legends media, because I think that Yamato is not only very popular, but very respected. And the situation from the outside perspective happened to be they did him dirty. And, you know, I said it publicly, even in French, I think that as per Yamato, it's kind of dirty, because I know that as a coach cannot do anything in a span of a month and a half, especially with Christmas break. But at the same time, you're not going to marry someone without moving in, you know, and trying to experience life together. So if suddenly you rent somewhere with someone and you see a lot of red flags that, you know, values don't align for the long term, and you're trying to get someone from the long term, the way Matt and Mac worked for years, or the way Dylan Falco and G2 are, and you see like, oh, we're probably not going to align long term, I think as an organization, you do a service to the guy as well not to keep him. And this situation is very... That's why it's walking a very thin line, because yes, it is not good towards Imato to kick him after 3 weeks, but keeping him for two splits on this disaster and saying, oh no, he owned it, while you knew you wouldn't keep him eventually because he didn't align with the way you want to work long term in terms of whatever it is, right? It's even worse. I think keeping someone that you know you're not going to keep is an employee is can do a disservice as well. So I'd say I really don't have any, not even the smallest insider information. I think that Yamato right. calling out the drafts was a mistake from him in terms of communication. That's something you shouldn't do. You should endorse your employees and your own choices, because your employees are a part of your own choices. So that was a big stake on the Carmine side. But if they felt like Yamato wasn't the right person for the future, for the next 2 years, I think they were right to shift quick in that sense. But the problem is, because it aligns in the same timeline as like their first split being absolutely dog water, we get this signal of, oh, they fired him because they were bad. The problem should have been, we think we don't align with Yamato long term, therefore sure. we're going to change the coaching staff, but we want to thank him because this has nothing to do with the results and we're going to work harder to fix the thing. But this, since this communication didn't happen, we have to read in between the lines. And if we start reading in between the lines, it's very easy to say they just did him dirty, you know? And I think Yamato is a good coach, and I think that it was definitely, it was a mistake in the hiring for Carmine, and I think it was a mistake in the even in an appliance from Yamato, thinking like Carmine would be the club for him, and sometimes it doesn't work. But moving forward, I feel like Carmine has to fix their own thing, and I wish they just communicated in a way that it washes the fact that Yamato wasn't the responsible for the first split. That's my, sure. my stance on the problem.
The other issue I have with this team is almost every player individually has all the same problems from the previous split. This is crazy to me. I've almost never seen a team just stay at the same level. Like, you'd think some of these players at one would get... I mean, it's not even like anyone got worse. They're just actually equally as bad for my money. Like, if I run down some of the players, mate, I'm thinking of the whole split here as well. So, like, I was thinking about this earlier. If you go with, like, the three speaking players. So, first of all, Capuchard still didn't seem to have very many picks that were good or matchups that were good. He even had that game where they like, didn't they like last pick him a Scion that was like a complete travesty. I remember that was garbage. I think it was maybe Fnatic or something. I forget which one I'm thinking of there. They had the game where there was that fucking Fnatic game where Targamas just like chased after the fucking Oscar in through the portal. Like, what? Like, so he's still making weird, he either does nothing or makes really weird moves that sort of hint, and seems like he doesn't comm again if you listen to the comms. Sakan still just doesn't do ults. Bro, this is the weirdest problem I've ever seen in pro League of Legends. It's not that you do bad plays, you just sometimes don't press the button. It's really weird. Like, the amount of games I've seen him stand there and sort of not hit the spell. I've said this on the last split. I feel like he has something like the yips, like that thing where golfers and darts players can't, like, you know, at the last second they can't do it. It's like, there's no way, guys, in scrims he does this. There's no way, but somehow on stage, something's like short-circuiting his brain for real from just pressing the button. I would even guess, without knowing, that he actually might genuinely have that feeling where he feels like he's trapped and he can't. If people don't know, I'll even give you a great example. The very great StarCraft player from Sweden, Naniwa, actually, one of the reasons I became friends with him is because I had read loads of books about sports psychology, and I saw him in these tournaments where he used to be like one of the best players in the world, and like the GSL, he was going to the quarterfinals. Then he'd go to a Western tournament with all, like, you know, worst players, and he'd come like 13th. And when I was watching the games, I was like, bro, what happens to you? Like, what in this game, you just like stopped in the middle of a fight? And he told me for real that he used to have a problem where he'd reached this point of like anxiety, and he said for real, he would almost feel like his hands became paralyzed, and he felt like he couldn't move them, and he was trying to send the signal from his brain to his. And and it wasn't doing it. So the Saka one's really weird as well. And then that's just if I'm doing the French side. Then if I go with the two players I rate, born upset, I'll tell you what the problem they have is this, right? This is where I've pointed out in the past, like Targ Armas makes me just think, hey, Flackhead was even better than I thought. I'll tell you the other player that's making me think about now, Zabatine, is Flackhead and Targ Armas had Jankos as their jungler. Mate, here's the difference. Jankos, phenomenal comms as a jungler and the ultimate jungler to like help and hold your hand and bring you with him on something. Bo's not that guy. Bo is the guy where you follow him. He makes the genius move. And I'll tell you what the problem they have with those two players is. Even though they've been like, they were good in Vitality, they have the opposite problem when the team collapses, Zabatine, which is Bo will go in no matter what. You saw that even in the games they won, he just goes in and goes in and goes in. And he's the guy who, even when he comes out, unlike Milky Way, he doesn't come out and do a genius move. He just comes out and then flashes back in. He's just so aggro. But your problem is this. In the team fight where that makes sense and is a good move, you'd want upset to then also commit and go, you know what, fuck it, I'm Viper. If I die, I die, but I'm just going to go, I'm going to dive in there, I'm going to do all the buttons, and if I do the craziest APM move ever, I win. The problem you have is this, upset has the opposite problem when they fail. I've always said, even though he's a mate of mine, when a team collapses, he does not have the trust in the team fight because this team's garbage in team fights. And in a team fight, even if he gets a couple of early kills, his problem is if he feels like you won't peel for him, if he feels like you're not target selecting the remaining, if you're not on their back line, he's not going to just permanently go in. He's going to do a bit more of a reckless. He's going to go, maybe I'll pull back a bit. I don't want to die in this fight. Or, you know what? Ooh, we're losing this fight. I'm out. And unfortunately, their team fights, this is another example, bro. It didn't matter how many times they got an early kill in these games. It didn't matter how many times they were ahead. It didn't matter how many times the other team was behind. All you had to do was reach team fights, and this team would just consistently lose. Like for real, I don't get it because I don't think these are five bad players. But it looked like it in these games, mate. It was crazy.
I mean, the first thing is a lot of their problems, I've seen them last year in the LFL.
Okay.
And they were just like in the summer splits. But just the competition wasn't fierce enough
right.
for their mistake to be punished. So a lot of this information has been lost. During the EMEA Masters, I rewatched some of the games and I think they were doing just fine against the guys that are now in Mad Lions. So we would assume that they're able to show the same level of performance. The good thing with Mad Lions came with the in opposite expectations as Carmine. Carmine should have been the team that comes in immediately as a contender because it was a EMEA winner plus two superstar players. Whereas MDK was Elioia after a pretty bad year among his career, trying to help the rookies coming from the MEA grow. And I think that the reckless approach of the Mad Lions that has helped Frescovi and Mirwin overcome the jitters of playing on LEC, whereas the pressure of Carmine has, it definitely increased the pressure over Seiken, Targamas, and Cabochard. And that's something that I think is often dismissed. It's just the mental approach of how it feels to be on stage and having to press your button, knowing that against you, you have caps, you have humanoid. These guys are going to sidestep your moves. So there is this whole mind game that you need to go through almost instinctively of like, do I hit the guy because he's going to pretend he's going to sidestep and he's not going to do it? Or should I hit next to him because I'm going to predict the sidestep? And there is this whole mental stuck. Like in a fighting game where like players are going to try to get information about how their opponents move and stuff. If you're thinking, if I fail today's game, I'm a failure and I never get to LEC again, right? If you're thinking about that, your brain doesn't have the time to compute the sidestep thing. And especially one thing, you spoke about Bo, and I think one quality of Bo that's usually pretty downplayed or people don't really understand that, it's his ability to hide his intent into his body language. You never know if Bo's going to turn. And that's very scary when you play against him because you don't know until which line of vision he's going to walk and if he's right to walk on this vision line, the same way Hili Sang does. Why? Because he's trying to hide if he knows if he can contest the space against his opponent. To achieve that, you need players that are able to read his intent while their opponent can't. If you have a team that does that, Bo becomes the best jungler in the league.
Yes.
Because when he turns, everybody understands that. If you look at all the turns from body splits, all of them, maybe like, I would say 95% of them, their teammates are as surprised as their opponents because they do not compute at the level Bo does. And so for them, Bo shoot back. She shoot back off. Bo knows he can go further, but And this mismatch in terms of understanding of risk reward, plus the fact that he's so good at hiding his body language, or hiding his intent into his body language, his teammates are completely lost. And the fact that all the other teammates have been put on a pedestal and know they have so much to lose in not pressing their button, they all try to minimize their risk while Bo is trying to maximize it because this is where he shines. And you have this absolutely dysfunctional team fights, as you said, Upset backs off because he doesn't want to take risk. Targamas is a panic attack because he never knows if he needs to follow Bo or not. Saiken is exactly in the same thing.
By the way, wouldn't you agree? It seems like, that's why I brought up the anchor spot. It seems like there is no connection between Bo and Targamas. They don't even seem like they know. You would believe they weren't even on the same comms channel. You know what I mean?
I mean, if you look at the guys after they lose games, it's always Cabochard that comes to Bo.
Yes, true.
You know, hit his shoulder, yes. Take him by the arm. The camaraderie of a team is very important, sure. And sometimes can signal things. I'm not going to write a fanfic about how the guys behave, sure, at home, but you can clearly see when a player is connected to another player. The fact that there is not even a physical jungle support connection, never, on stage and on scene and during content or anything, makes me think that two players have a very different approach of the game. And Targamas is not this guy who's very flexible. Has he been one of the best supports when the system was favorable to him? Yes, but you've seen last year in Excel and you've seen this year in Carmine that if he doesn't feel like the environment is good for him, he tends to shut down. And so you have triple shutdown plus Bo. So I don't know how you fix this team, but I would go for developing new talents for Carmine. Try to find someone you can build around. If you don't want Bo, keep your guys and try to find a rookie jungle and try to get a much more front-to-back team fighting style for the summer split, and then you make a big decision next year. If you think Bo is worth investing on, which I think he is personally, you should probably go with more rookies that are willing to sacrifice their career on trying to follow Bo, more so than people that have everything to lose playing at the edge. And Saiken, Cabo, and Targamas have everything to lose in terms of reputation, trying to play a playstyle that's so aggressive that they might ruin the game in one play every single game. So it's a very hard situation for Carmine now.
By the way, just to check, have you been watching the Milky Way jungler, the guy in FPX who's been blown everywhere? Did you watch much of him this split?
I watched one series where he carried the whole series. So I was lucky, I was front seat. It was on Dumbstream, and he was and sensing the guy, I was like, this guy is crazy. And when I watched Milky Way, I was like, that's the... And I think Milky Way has the self-reflection of, I'm in a team that functions well, so I have so much space. You know, it's like the rookie striker in soccer that doesn't know he's that good. And because the middle field is so solid, he can take stupid risk of playing an offside, at the edge of offside all the time and score three goals a match. Milky Way is that guy. But the thing is, it is very hard to do that in Europe. And you know why? That's a very good thing that Mephisto, I don't know if you know Mephisto, former scouting analyst for Vitality. No, he's a... He was doing... He does data and he's trying to do objective rating for players.
Oh, Mephisto. Sorry, I didn't hear you. I thought he said Mythy Scroll or something. I was like, okay. Oh, Mephisto, the former Vitality coach. Yeah. Yes, sure.
And so he said something... He came on my stream once and he said something very interesting. He's like, when you want to play for the jungle... You have, politically, it's bad because you have to force four players into a playstyle. And that's why in most teams in Europe,
the jungle is the dog. Yeah, of course.
He's the dog.
Yes.
And it's because politically, imagine going into the Carmine Corp and saying, you guys, you're bad.
Yes.
You're not good enough. You're at the service of this guy because this guy is going to win the game. Super hard to do in Europe. Gosh. Culturally, it's not. So that's why I think we see Bo struggle that much. It's because he cannot play in a different way. He's completely useless. He's B, even C tier in that sense. And teams won't go into a political war with the players to enable their jungle. And therefore, the Bo project is failing for now in the West.
What I would say is this. The other factor people forgot about Bo was that he did it all with Doinbee. By the way, the dream mid laner for any jungler, yes. So the problem is, I would put it this way. Here's how I would cut the Gordian knot here. Here's how it goes. There's a simple flowchart if you're Carmine Corp. Are you keeping Sakan as your mid laner? If you are, then it is time to let Borg go. Look, I think that's terrible. Personally, if I could take one thing, my one piece of advice to Carmin Corp would be this. The only player I would keep is Borg, definitely. As in, that's a player who can one day be extremely good, and I wouldn't want to be the guy who gives him to someone else and then sees them put the right players around him and then fucking wins. So I would personally keep, but I understand if they want to go with this approach, keeping the LFL players, you probably should remove him, because again, if you make him the Maokai player, it's a waste of everyone's fucking time, including his and your own. And then the other factor is, the reason I've asked the Milky Way question is, it's funny, you can tell who doesn't watch the LPL, because now me and Dom hyped Bo, and now we're hyping Milky Way, a lot of people who haven't watched it go, this is just that Bo guy all over again. It's like, no, because here's the thing about Bo. What impressed me about Bo was the psychopath always going forwards play. It was the mechanics. The Milky Way guy has this like poise of when he goes in and out, that's way better. In fact, I've heard in his team, he might even be the shot caller, mate, and it looks way more like that in the game. The difference with Bo is he clearly needs a shot caller. Like, here's the other thing. If you're another team and you're going to take Bo, say they release him now, I'll tell you what, you better be the team that has the mid laner that can help the jungle and play for him, and ideally a support that somehow, like, I don't know, vibes with him, understands him. If you can get these two pieces, I feel like you could make this guy a really good player. It's the obvious dream, isn't it? But will they really do it? Who knows, right? They might be scared themselves to go in on that. But I'd gamble on it. If I'm a team, if I tell you right now, that's the piece that could take you to the promised land. Don't you think?
I think Vitality with Bo right now, looking at how Illy Sang plays right now,
he would love it. They would love each other. They would basically meet, and the premise is like, that would be like fucking Goku and Vegeta teaming up, mate. Like, they'd love it. It'd be fucking the shit, wouldn't it? They would both just go in like maniacs.
The G2 Vitality would be an insane matchup. And I think even Fnatic is playing out of their mind. We would have a good region. I think if and no offense to Douglas, because I think he's been performing well this split, but I think that Bo and Hillisang playing together now becomes like as a evidence to me. I had to really wrap my head around it, because I think that the playstyle of Hillisang has been very erratic because he was in dysfunctional team. But seeing him in this Vitality, well-coached, and we around good players, I think with a jungler of the caliber of Bo, this team would become extremely scary to face for anyone. But, you know, we don't make the off-season.
No, of course. And I'll just say, that is, to me, the one major flaw of Bo is just his macro. It's like, look, at the end of the game, he's not the guy, if you just put him in the middle of nowhere and drop him in a game, he's just going to know what to do. But the reason why I get mad at people pointing that out is, he's still like a borderline rookie jungler playing in a foreign region in a second language. Like, that's a problem we can solve, Zabatin. We can get other players that can do that for him, and they can even tell him where to go. And as long as because like I said, my analogy for him is, Bo is supposed to be the sharpest possible tip to your spear, but I need someone else holding the spear. You know what I mean?
He's a tactical genius, not a strategical genius. And I think people misunderstand the difference between tactic and strategy. And I think that Bo will find edges individually on the enemy jungle because he knows how to get into a jungle head and know exactly the timings, the damage to be able to cut the jungle. And once he pushes the jungle away from a side of the map, he takes over a side of the map and tries to dive, right? This style is not enough to win in League of Legends. This is just a very solid block on which you can leverage a lead, and from this lead you can control the map and win the game. This is strategy, but the thing is, people expect so much, like, oh, he's vocal. Yeah, he's vocal in the first 15 minutes of the game on around his tactical play.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not because you do a bunker rush early game in a StarCraft game that you can win on six bases, you know. Sure. There are two different skills. Jankos is very good at that. Perks is very good at that. I think Caps is pretty good at that. I think even people like Xmithy, Meteos, Double Leaf, these guys that have been long-term winners. Yes. Because when the game gets steady and slow, you need someone who understands, like, oh, they're going to go to the dragon and we're going to, like, give them the dragon, do a fast Baron recall and try to win by doing this. Bo doesn't do that. But he will crit consistently in the early game because he's a tactical genius.
I know what you mean. Basically, it's actually the same concept. If people don't know, with Illisang, I'd say the same thing. Obviously, the angles he finds are genius. His actual tactics for like little skirmishes, his problem is the bigger picture. He doesn't always have it. Sometimes he will just do these little moves that the team doesn't understand. I even thought of Illisang the second you said that thing of like, even his team doesn't know if he's going in. The story with Illisang is it takes people ages to warm up to play with him. For the same reason, they'll just be like, holy shit, even I didn't know he was going in there. What the fuck? You wanted me to follow up on that? Like, I didn't even conceive there was a player there. What? Like, I thought it was just a fog of war. He's going into it, Nautilus Flash or something. Like, what the fuck? So, no, I agree on that one. Right, let's just pivot to Vitality. It's obviously a good one to switch to. Because, mate, Vitality, I said this at the beginning of the split, it's still the case. This team low-key sort of tortures me because I knew, actually, that this team would be a bit better than last split. I have a lot of trust in it. I told you, I'm never going to give up on a MAC team after one split fucks it, especially these micro splits. We don't even play as many games. And then the other thing is, the problem is, though, mate, what kills me about this team, this is why we've just had that whole, like, fantasy speculation about what if we could put Boy in, is because it's just so obviously capped, though, by some of the, like, areas where they don't have synergies and where they can't sort of make it work. So I actually do think, like, look, I still think where they are at the moment, like, this could be a team that could be, like, third or fourth. They could make a little run in the playoffs. It could be solid. The issue is, though, I don't think they can hit the top level. You know, they're bumping their head against like being like third or fourth for me. Unless they can fix the jungle situation, unless they can connect top lane to the team. Like, look, the upside is yes, Hillersang didn't in. He's also not prime Hillersang, though. He's not like the old Hillersang that would win you the game. So I don't know. It's still good. Like, pretty sweet. I love it. Mid and AD. I think mid and AD are both really good. I actually think Karzic never was bad in this team. He's killing it. The issue is, though, where do they get the next level? You know what I mean? Where do they get that final gear, as it were?
I had a long fight with Vitality fans on the Dagla situation because it's... I want to praise the kid.
They want him replaced, presumably. So is that the player they're all blaming, I'm guessing?
No, they actually love him and thinks he's one of the best junglers in the league.
Oh, the other way around. Okay, wow, okay.
Because the thing is, you know, the fan hive mindset is if the results are good, the players are good.
Oh, right? I see, right.
Right?
I see. Now I get it. So the problem here is I'm looking and seeing like, yeah, they had some good games, but they could have done so much more. Whereas they're going, no, this is good enough. This is all fine. Yeah, we're good. We don't need to change
anything.
It's good. Yeah. Oh,
there is nothing
right.
to improve. You see
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So Douglas is, when I watch all the junglers in the LEC and I watch all the games of the split multiple times because, you know, I do a daily review after each, so I have to rewatch the plays and stuff. The top five and plus Bo are players where even when I have all the information because I'm in a spectator mode, I often find it genius that they make this turn, they dodge this vision, they find this play. I think for me, the player that has been the most shiny this split has been Sheo from BDS has consistently won. If you look at all the matches, he finds an edge in early game with a losing top because Adam hasn't been super good. The meta has changed top. And bot lane was scaling, so he couldn't really play bot side. So he had to play mid jungle. And Azir was banned for Nuke. So they had to find a system. He has found openings in, I think, like 6 or 7 of their games, which is phenomenal. It's like prime Razork at Misfits, you know, people finding, or even Razork. Razork finds thing that you didn't even think about while having the spectator. Douglas is a little slow yet, right? He's improving, but he's contesting objective too early. He's not following all the time like Hillisang where he shoots. He's not getting a deep vision as deep as he should. There is a lot of things that needs to be improved. And he seems to improve pretty slowly. And his champion pool pretty narrow. So for all these reasons, there is kind of an orange flag on Douglas. Because I think that if you compare Douglas with one of the best jungle in the league, and you try to put what a Razork will do in Vitality versus Douglas, you see that Vitality suddenly is a team with 3 winning lanes that has the best team fight in the league or the second best team fight in the league. And definitely is a contender for MSI. And any team, even on the international stage that plays too slow, will have a struggle to fight Vitality in team fights. So they could have a good shot at like being a strong contender. Douglas plays way more like an LFL jungler so far. He goes to the Drake, does the Drake, recalls, does his camps. Oh, mid lane comes. Okay, we're going to do a 2v2. There is no this genius passing or genius like dodging the vision that Malorang was like, used to in the LEC. For this reason, I think Vitality is going to hit the ceiling because I think that Fnatic and G2 are just much more well-rounded in terms of teams. Like, they have quality all across the board, whereas I think that Vitality is a team of 4 top LEC players and 1 extremely good LFL player that can play bottom LEC for now. So maybe next year, but for this year, I don't have high expectations in terms of like international for Vitality.
Yeah, the biggest problem I would say is, it's like you say, if you think about the other junglers in LEC, the issue is that's the one area you're going to have the disadvantage in any of the big matches. In fact, in all the matches I'm talking, if you're going to get into a third, fourth position and try and get to that second MSI spot, the problem is you're going to run into Razork, you're going to run into Eldioi, you're going to run into all these better junglers than you've got. Shio even, yeah, you're going to run into players that, unfortunately, right now, we're going to potentially crack you, whereas actually, yeah, if you think about how Yike played in his first split in G2 last year. Yeah, he had three winning lanes, but he won the game from it. He made all the great plays from it, etc. Yeah, I see what you mean. In that sense, I see why the fan thinks, oh, there's no problem. Yeah, it's all fine. But it's like, no, but if I could upgrade that piece, we'd actually be second best in the league. Yeah, I'm with you. We'd be better than Fnatic. We would.
And that's not, you know, the discussion with the fan is usually they think like you hate on the player, sure. But I can only sing praises towards Douglas. I think that his track, his path, the pace at which he improved is very positive. There is nothing bad. It's just usually these players, either they are like a revelation, like Yike, and they just bloom in like 3 months. But I think the environment of G2 is exceptional for that. Either it's going to take a year or two, and that's normal. Like, you see new, especially I think the position where it's the hardest to learn on LEC supports, and you see new supports hitting a wall very fast because they're just good mechanically, but the game is just not about mechanics and on stage. And I think someone like Douglas needs to learn that he needs to hone his craft to the point where he can find edge by himself and make play that are straight winning and not just going to a lane and trying to force a play. Or going to an objective. There is more than that in League of Legends. This layer needs to be taught to him. And I think a lot of Vitality fans that can align with me are a little frustrated because I think that VTO has never improved that much. Like, the pushing caps in lane is something he wasn't doing before, especially on control mages. Karzy is consistent, which he hasn't been in like 2 years. And Fodon has done the split of his life.
Yeah, he's
and really Hillisang is back. So you look at this team and you're like, I really want to have a final against Vitality versus G2. And then you think about the jungle support matchup and you're like, Hillisong is ready to answer Mikix, but I think Mikix Yike is just going to destroy the game. And it feels bittersweet because I'm happy that they have Douglas for the future. But for this split, right, I wish they had a better jungle.
Yes. I'll even say as well, that's actually why it's funny that when it was Vitality, everyone also, as well as Bo, was shitting on the Photon guy. Like, what the fuck? Bro, do you guys just have no eye test? Both of those players, Bo and Photon, have mad talent. Like, that's why I always say my only ever diss to Photon the whole time is he's not always connected to the team. I think as an actual top player, I can see why they picked him up. I'll bet he's a fucking solo queue demon if you have him in career, mate. He looks mega. His actual talent level's obvious. Yeah, no, same thing. His skill was good. Everyone knows Hirit's skill was good. That first split, that's why they were popping off, yeah. No, the problem I have is this. I even think, despite all those good first games, even though technically SK was one of the teams that just crept into the thing, to actually have SK as the first round opponent in a best of three is already spicy, those other team. Because I'll tell you what, SK, they are mad inconsistent, but when they hit, they have some pretty good players. You know people like Irrelevant can carry a game. You know people like fucking Exekit can get 13 kills in a game. They could do this. Obviously, they're mega, but I do feel like this is a good first test for Vitality. We'll get a real sense right out the gate. Can they actually be a contender in this first series for me?
I think it should be a win for Vitality from the trajectories both teams have, but I'd say that's one of the only matches that's not given. Like, the
Fnatic match, right?
Is given, the G2 match is given.
Yeah.
And you know Vitality still has this thing of, oh, it's Vitality. But at the same time, every communication you've seen on social media or anything from Vitality is a long-term project. So I don't want to be, you know, you can't arrive and just sanction people on the short term if they tell you I'm building on like 6 or 7 splits.
Yes.
So probably 2025 we'll have a much better answer on like what's the Vitality project. They have really good players in Academy as well. But for the time being, obviously, it's a little frustrating for the people who see how potent this team is and see their like stupid mistakes in early mid game that could be easily fixed. It is what it is. I think they can go to MSI, but I'd say Fnatic is still the contender in my eyes.
Let's pivot and talk about Fnatic then. Because obviously, if you were a Fnatic fan, last season you got teased, but then they just blew balls to you right in the playoffs and didn't win that series against Mad Lions and didn't go to the finals. Like, was right there. By the way, I will say for them, look, BDS had a better case, but they benched their best player, so they can blame themselves for that. Fnatic, the path was right there. The red carpet was rolled out. You just didn't walk down it. You just tripped up on the first step. Oh, shit. And then Mad Lions got to go instead. This split is what you were dreaming of the whole time. It's like you took all the good things of the first split. You even leveled them up a bit. Razox did really good. Humanoid had some better games. Oscarinin didn't have as many weaker. Like, everything you wanted happened this time. Noah was even better. The Jung guy connected more. Like, everything's great. Like, here's the difference. On those other teams where I'm like, how do they get to this next level or how do they develop? This team has developed. The only question is this those other team. They're still in Fnatic. They've still got that fucking moment in some of the games, though, where they can just, as good as they are, they can beat everyone. You've seen that. But they can also lose to teams they should not lose to. And for some really, they still have that little bit of sort of like fragility where if they just crack, it can all go. It can all be tears. So I agree with you. Look, they're going to have a very easy opening round. They've got exactly what the doctor ordered. Nice little warm-up. Get ready. In fact, already start thinking about G2. You're going to be playing them anyway. The issue is, though, I'm still slightly scared about Fnatic. I'm scared that they might let me down, you know.
I mean, they were sick on the third week, so we didn't have confidence. Because I think that everybody thinks about the second week of Fnatic when they beat G2 and they were like straight unbeatable.
Yeah.
It was the best. It was a regular season. It was one of the best performances, like the best week, right? We don't never speak in terms of weeks, but that was one of the best weeks I've seen from a team this whole year.
Yeah.
And these teams looks like they can go challenge G2 in the BO5. The problem is you go back next week and you're like, oh, can they confirm? And everybody's sick. And everybody's playing really bad because they're sick. So there is this question mark of, was it a one-off? Like, have they found, you know, the magic recipe on one patch, on 1 week of BO1s? If it's the case, then it would be extremely disappointing for the fans and for the audience. If what the coach is saying publicly, which is they will win a split, if it's not this one, it will be the next one. And he see, like, the improvement that we've all seen is happening during the playoffs, this team might be G2. This team, with how G2 has been playing the last week, I think this team is built with quality. Like, yeah, there is enough quality in this team to be G2 in a BO5.
That's the problem, though. That's why my point earlier is so pertinent. Because if you're a Fnatic fan, you go, oh, shut up, being here. Look, we even beat G2. It's like, yes, but you, again, remember what I said? You have to get to the match against G2 in the final. Not even in the upper bracket, you can get that one. The question is, can you get to that one in the grand final? That's my question. Because, yeah, I'm with you, mate. Like, the actual, essentially, whoever did this, like, whoever chose in the offseason to only change the support, and even then not for a massive name player, look, I was critical of it. I actually thought they didn't do enough. Fair play. If this is what they had in mind, if this is what they envisioned, then I have to say their vision was better than mine. Like, they saw what could happen. They saw the final pieces that could be connected. Because the cool thing for me is, in the last split, I actually, at the end, felt quite sorry for Razork. I actually thought sometimes he could be the best jungler and still not win the game, which I think is cruel as fuck in a world where people hate on the jungler any time they lose and assume it's his fault. This time around, mate, he's got the team around him now. Like, now if he plays really well, yeah, they just win the game. Like, I agree, the punching power of this team is really, really good. The obvious question becomes, let's have them play a series against Vitality, Heretics. These are the teams you want to see him play. Right? You want to see. In fact, I'd love to see that lower bracket best of five between one of these teams and Fnatic, mate. That would be the test. If they can get through that, then you know what? Then I'll get my popcorn for the final and my big fucking bottle of soda and I'll close the blinds, you know. My joke here would be, if upset was that, get the box of Kleenex out and put next, whatever, you get the joke. But the point is, I'd actually get hyped then. I actually could believe, unlike that Mad Lions one, that actually they could win. The difference in the Mad Lions one, I was like, wow, they won again, cool. Oh shit, it's over. Like, for this one, I could actually believe. By the way, even historically, what everyone's dream is, G2 Fnatic, five games, proper like juggernaut, and you want it to be the heavyweight boxer match. You want them both throwing haymakers, G2 wins one game dominant, Fnatic wins one game dominant, then we have like the crazy game five that goes to 40 minutes. That could happen if Fnatic turns up. It's up to them, though. It's if they turn up.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the highest ceiling for Fnatic since years.
Yes.
And that's no surprise they're the first of the regular season for the first time in 6 years.
Yep.
It's because it's the best. I think that there is a legitimate reason for the Fnatic fans to be hyped.
Yeah.
But I think that, they've learned to put the cork back into the champagne bottle too often to to celebrate now. So yeah, of course, I'm on your side. They have to pass this test of just going through the gauntlet and facing G2. And then we can decide whether or not they're fit for titles and international, right?
Let's pivot since you brought it up. Let's talk about BDS. I'll tell you where I'm going to start here, Zabatine. I've got a weird abstract point, but you'll understand it analytically. Whenever I would do these shows, the trouble with doing shows like this is it's actually not my style of how I like to analyze the game. If people ever see me in CSGO, my style is I am the guy who sticks to like who a team fundamentally is, who a player is over years, not just today or was he hot yesterday. I normally go against that thinking of like, wow, but they were insane yesterday. So if they compete that form, in fact, if someone like a Maniac and Yakko says that, I would even turn to them and go, yeah, but we don't know if they will. Whereas, you know, I can rely on the things that are established. I know that, like, you know, class will show through, etc. The problem I have with BDS is this. In past shows like this, where you are, by definition, because it's weekly, you are just watching two games of a team or three games of a team, and then you're just judging based on small sample size. Did someone have a pop off? Was someone shit? Right? The downside of that is it will make your rankings of who the players are constantly changing. And I noticed when I would bring certain coaches on, I could tell the coaches that I had my philosophy from CS. Because an example would be Yamato Cannon. If you brought Yamato Cannon on one of those shows, sometimes to people who watch every week of the LEC, they thought he was an idiot. Because what would happen is he would say something like, well, I still have Jankos in my top three. And then they'd be like, no, but this is a split where Jankos isn't doing that well. What do you mean? What the hell? And the point is, it's like, yeah, but he's not getting too caught up in these last two games. He's saying, like, in the long run, like, you put him in the playoffs, put him in Worlds, like, I'm going to trust Jankos over, even could have been Misfits Razork. Like, you said somebody I test is playing way better at the time, but he's a rookie, you know, he's inexperienced. You don't know yet if he's going to be. The one thing I'll say is this. My ranking last split, where I did say on Twitter the week before he was benched, I actually did think Adam was the best top laner in the LEC. That was in the vein of watching week to week. Because I'll tell you what, mate, when I've come back out of it, and I used to be a hater, and I watched this split, bro, I actually think I low-key got a tiny bit tricked. And here's how I got a tiny bit tricked. Because he really was, at one point a couple of years ago, just like that fucking two or three trick. And I even say three trick, like Garen was even pickable 3 years ago. He was really a two trick. He was all off from Darius. That's what he could do, right? And back then, he used to force it even when it wasn't the meta. But what impressed me about last split was then he added in, like, he had a Renekton. He could play like a Sion if he wanted. He had like this. Here's the problem. That tricked me into thinking he plays his picks and the matchup. No, he just plays those picks. He's added, he's got, but because you saw it this split, he tried to force all those picks again, even when there's totally different top lane picks. And I'll tell you what, mate, when I watch his game, this is how I know he's not just the best in any context. He's the best in his meta when the team plays a certain way. The reason why I have to add that condition is, when I think back, it wasn't just past years. I think even now in these splits, like, when would I ever see a fucking Gwen angle from Adam? You know what I mean? When would I ever see him pop a Jace and go, you know what, I'm a fuck this lane up. That's not the Adam we're going to see. So my downside is this. He has developed over the years. When it was last split, I do still think he's the best top laner. In this current split, in this current BDS, unfortunately, he hasn't been that star player. And mate, when he isn't the star player, this team is a it's where they are where they should be. They're a mid-table team. They're just not that good, mate.
I think it's combined. It's everything. I think what you said is very true. I think that the meta has been very hard for Adam because he's the character specialist in a fighting game. You know, it's picking the off meta champion or character that nobody knows and knowledge check you. Like he knowledge check you and it's like, oh, I have the damage. You didn't know that and runs at you and you're because you never know if he's right or wrong to run at you and start brawling you. Sometimes you respect when you shouldn't because you just don't know, right? Like you have less defensive knowledge, so he's going to get an edge on you. The problem is sometimes the fundies, right? The fundamentals have been skipped by Adam and where he offsets his lack of fundamentals or his discipline towards fundamentals. I don't think he doesn't know them. I think sometimes he skips them by using something that's outside the box. This split has been very narrow in terms of space for top laners.
Yes.
And you've seen a lot of terrible moves from Adam. In early game, I remember the Photon, when you played versus Photon as Olaf in early game. This game is slowly loses right through like early game and the team tried to salvage by investing on the top side. But BDS is more than that. Unfortunately, the bot lane is ass on this split. It's only scaling, only Zeri. Like teams have been trying to snowball through bot side. But if you look at the spot SK leaves the same hell. They want to play through bot side. They want to play skirmishing mid jungle. And it's control mage mid. Pretty stable top side. Serviceable jungle and scaling bot lane. And it's very, very hard to snowball games. That is the worst possible for BDS. And that's why I put Shio as my jungle of the split, is because if Adon is 0-2 most of games, or minus 50 CS on a champion that needs to be ahead, like Olaf, if Ice and Lebrov are playing Zeri and Braum bot lane and they can't really move because it's a 2v2, how come they won so many games, you know? And that is because Nuke and Shio, especially Shio, but I think Nuke has been playing very, very well. Like, it's probably his best split, have held the house, right? They've like withstand the walls and the ceilings with their hands through most early games, allowing BDS to come back in team fights because they have such a good team fight discipline. They have such a good vision discipline. They have such a good posture in team fights that they will beat teams they shouldn't beat, even with a deficit. Adam, unfortunately, I'd love to see him take half a year working on his fundamentals and come back with what he has on top of that, because knowing a lot about the FGC, because I really love fighting games, you never see champions who don't have good fundamentals. Like, you will see a top player in fundamentals pick a character that he barely knows and still do decent. You never see a guy that can rank high with a character that nobody knows become first, usually because fundies. So Adam needs to work on his fundamentals to be able to be more stable in metas where he cannot just pick Garen or Darius and get pressure from Shio. And BDS will become a top team.
I know what you mean on that one. Like, I'll give you an example I often used to use in my Thorin's Thoughts videos back in the day when I first started to use sports analogies, for example, as like a way to help people understand if they know the sport. So the best example I can give is obviously Michael Jordan. Everyone's going to know Michael Jordan's game. But the problem is, if you think of Michael Jordan, you think of like crazy dunks or like super sick hard shots, etc., or like amazing, like essentially the highest skill level imaginable. But what people won't understand is, if you ask someone who's a basketball expert, why is Michael Jordan the best, they won't go with that stuff. There's other players that are amazing, dunks and crazy stuff. What they'll tell you is, he had the best fundamentals of anyone in basketball. His footwork was amazing. By the way, basic stuff anyone could work on. The worst player in the NBA could work on this level up. Simple things, like he really does do like all the extra shots every day, and he does shots from the same, like, for example, if people know, the signature shot of Michael Jordan is a turning around fadeaway jump shot. He practiced a billion of those every day, even though he's already the best at it. That's why he's the best. He practices every day all those aspects of my footwork, how I'm going to get to that point, then I'm going to spin off in this move. And he would just do the same move 500 times. It's what Kobe Bryant copied, if people don't know. The same concept, you do it over and over and over and over. And even though you're already the best, you drill the fundamentals, because the logic goes like this. If you just have talent, talent's sort of a gimmick. It's there sometimes, it's not there sometimes. A move's genius, a move's not genius. That can give you this. It can give you the up-down, the EKG heart monitor, right? The genius of fundamentals is, it puts where the heart monitor line basic is up. So the fundamentals take you up to here, and then now sometimes you go up, but you never go down. You know what? You never go back to there, which is the field. It's the Hillersang all the way down. You go to here and you're still good. You still have like a basic. And also, by the way, then when you're not hitting your shot, you have all the basics there. You have the other aspects of how to still be a player that can contribute. Because the problem I've seen in this team is, if Adam isn't the star, this is why they had that big beef with Crowdy. If he isn't the star, this team is like half as good, mate. That knockout punch isn't there. I mean, you saw, I criticised them a little bit last split, where I did think sometimes in the mid game they were a little bit sus last split, and they relied on winning that like amazing team fight at the Dragon or whatever. This split, I think the macro was equally bad. Some of the players weren't as good. Like you say, bot lane and top isn't there. So as a result, it would have been harder for them to win more games, I think.
Salvaging a bad situation in League of Legends is always a terrible choice. And BDS has been trying to salvage. I think it's a lack of knowledge of... If Adam's not ahead and you have no option to snowball through bot side, like, cross-mapping is pretty bad right now.
Yes.
And so they've been trying to salvage this situation. I mean, Adam hasn't been feeding every single game. That would be disproportionate to say so, right? All proportion guarded. I think it's fair to say that BDS needs to reassemble the puzzle where Shio and Nuke keep their lead in early game the way they've done D-splits. Adam comes back as the player he was in the first split. And they have a little bit more of, like, I would say, bot side play. They don't really have bot side play in early game to become the team that can go and pretend to become better than Fnatic. I think Fnatic has an edge. First split, BDS went super fast out of the starting blocks. Good systems, good vision, good team fights, good meta. Everything clicked for them. But over the two splits now, I would say Fnatic is more well-rounded than them. And so BDS is in the second wagon with Vitality as a team that has some pretty clear improvement path, but that are not easy to overcome. And if they can fix them, then we'll have, I mean, the dream is to have four good teams in Europe, right? That would be great. Like having BDS, Fnatic, G2, and Vitality as like the top four teams would make the league very like relevant, I think, internationally, if G2 can train against good teams that have different play styles. But so far, I would agree that the fact that bot lane was stale and Adam didn't perform well, I'm happy to see Shio and Nuke step up, but that's not enough to become a top team.
Yeah, by the way, I also agree. We're pointing out he went from being the best to he dropped off. He's not the worst. Like, for example, if we're saying Fnatic's the best team, he was fucking great in the Fnatic game. If you want to go watch that one, that was a good Renekton game. Yeah, I'll give him that. No, the issue I have with this team is basically like this, is I do think as a team, let me think where I was going with this. Oh, I'll tell you an example. You know when they played the game against G2, where they let G2 have Smolder and then they just got shit on. Everyone's like, it's just Smolder. Like, here's where, like I said at the beginning, I will always give benefit when I know a coach is legit. I don't think Stryker's an idiot. And he was like, what the hell, Smolder's in the game? That was like a Dylan Falco. Like, he's the best at baiting you in the draft. And the problem is this. If someone like Stryker gets baited in the draft, I'm going to tell you right now, Zebatine, it's not because he's an idiot. It's because he didn't have the same tools that Dylan Falco had to work with. He had more limited choices. He had to give probably that up at one point in the draft. I'm sure, by the way, he got Azeri himself. He tried to do what he could, but that's an example there of me where sometimes the other thing that happens to the coaches, the fan or the hypothetical LS Dom does act like the coach can just make the player lock in anything he wants. But the reality is the player is the bottleneck to what the coach can pick. Like, he doesn't have 700 draft options. He's got a few. And if Dylan Falco figured it out and unfortunately guessed early, then you're going to get trapped a few times. It's going to happen.
I mean, first, you have to understand that G2, they all have the level of fundamentals where they kind of never scream to work on their fundamentals. They just rehearse, right? It's a rehearsal of fundamentals. Probably the first three games of the day are like, guys, we're going to just make sure like you can execute a dive, you're warmed up, you can invade camps, you can prep early game pressure the way we do. And then they start thinking about what our champions or opponents are likely to play, how we can counter them, what are the champions that will do decent considering the strong options in the game right now in terms of items and stuff. And so that's one thing I really, that's my pet peeves, is when I open YouTube and you have these analysts that don't work with teams, never worked with teams. You know, they're like, you know, very good players, coaches, and they're like, why didn't you just play talent jungle? And you're like, do you think BDS has the time to slot like seven talent jungle games like this week? After, like, they almost lost their first three games. G2 has the time for it because they don't have to work on it because they have caps. They have, like, the best players at every single position that already understand the whole mental stack of the game. And so they can, like, they still have a little... Think about players' brain as, like, a Tetris game. And you have the line at the top. And if it goes to the top, the player burns out. Or anything above, they don't think about it, no matter how much you tell them. That's why, like, coaches don't play. Yamato doesn't play Azir, you know?
Yes.
So if you have this in mind, G2 have probably half their Tetris stage full when they scream. So they have half a Tetris stage available for creative picks, fancy strategies, level ones, all these things. I think a team like BDS probably has like four blocks, two blocks. A team like SK or Carmine don't even have, they're already overstacked on just playing the basics of the league. So I really hate the idea of the coach got out draft because they didn't find this talent jungle solution. It never works, man. Like, I've tried. I've been that guy. You know, I came. I was an analyst. I was doing things. I was exactly this guy. That's why it annoys me so much, because I was so dumb in the past.
Right.
And I tried to tell my players, you should play that. Yeah, guess what? He picked the champion.
Of course.
He did nothing right with it. It was a disaster.
And then he went, hey, Zabatine, why am I picking this? I'm fucking going back to, you know, fucking Lee Sin, like, or whatever,
you
know, right?
You're smashing your head. You're like, but dude, you have done the exact opposite of what I told you.
Yes.
But his mental stack is already full. So you can't. Like, he's trying to navigate the champ. What he's trying to make him do the one-person play with his champion. And he's already struggling just to maneuver with him. So, All of this information combined, you do understand why it is so hard for teams such as Vitality, Fnatic, or BDS to just overcome their thing and just become G2. Like, G2 is very hard to beat because their players have a more effective training because they're already better. So every week of scrim of G2 is worth 3 weeks of scrim of Carmine.
Right, let's actually pivot. Let's do the G2 conversation, because here's what I want to do. I'm going to actually do a rare fan request. I don't normally do this, but I do notice that there are a type of fan. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I get the take. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. Here's what they say, Zabatine. They say the problem this year is that because everyone thinks the G2 roster is the best and the coaching's the best and overall they're just the best and shouldn't lose, if they ever do lose these BO1s or lose a game in a series and you think they shouldn't, they think that as analysts we're too kind on them and that we just essentially that we're being biased. What we're doing is when they actually play bad, we're like, oh, it's fine because it's G2 and, you know, they're just playing with their food or that sort of an angle, or, you know, oh, they're experimenting, they don't care, you know, they know that they'll win in the playoffs anyway. They think that's like copium, essentially, and we should just analyze and go, no, you did bad in this game, you didn't play well, right? My issue is I am the guy who just thinks, like, I do think they experiment with some of these picks. I don't think some of those drafts really, and like at the end, I don't think Dylan Falcone week three really picks those drafts because he thinks those are the best ones, and that's he picked that in the MSI final, for example. But I'll give them credit. There are times this team, G2, can have games, even in the final, they had that couple of games that was sus from some players. They can have games that are just bad. So I'll ask you this. If you look at who they lost to, the weird thing is this. You could get scared on either end. They lost to Rogue again, which is inexplicable. And like at this point, should almost be like a crime in itself, because the joke is if you watch Rogue this split, mate, they're the team that everyone in draft gives shit like Smolder because they still think they can beat them. Like, just straight up, they don't care. I even saw that one game where they had like the LCK Exodia of like everything, like Wayne, everything. Like, holy shit, bro, they're giving you everything here. So that tells me teams don't respect Rogue. So that one's okay. You're allowed to fuck around on that one. But if you lose to Fnatic and Vitality, those are top teams right now. Like, those are the ones we're getting a bit scared about if you lose to. So where is G2 at? Are there any concerns for you from what you've seen?
I do, but that's actually not from the play.
Okay.
It is a final situation I'm sending to you on Discord where G2 loses to Vitality and you see Romain, the general manager, walk to Yike. And I know Romain and he's a very cheerful guy. So usually, you know, the mood is pretty light. And if you look at the body language of Yike, his apologies, his face during the game,
right,
either he was not content with his champion and he didn't want to pick it, but they made him pick it. Either he's very unsure of his performance right now, and he didn't, like, for any reason. But these are, you need to try to find the stigmas of if something is punctual or if it's a trend. This is not a once, like, the fact that he's making this face after losing, the fact that Romain doesn't come, talk to him, just, like, picks up something and leaves. There has been a discussion that was dysfunctional, leading to Yike feeling that way.
Right.
This can be a hint. I'm not saying it is, because I have no inside information and I'm trying to read in between the lines. This might be a hint of something a little bit more dysfunctional than what usually happens at G2. And the fact that they got edged by Fnatic and Vitality back-to-back is as well a symptom. So there is a little of, like, if you do your, you know, your detective work, there might be something. I trust G2 on fixing the thing and just bouncing back and being strong. But for sure, I don't think that their regular season has been a honeymoon. I think it has been pretty harsh for them. They came very strong. They came undefeated. They looked like the best they've ever been. I really felt like this team was as fun themselves. And there has been like a kind of a stop, a break in the process, and looking at them and their body language in the last week, it felt like something was not working as well. I'll try to get Romain on my stream in French eventually, I think, after the split, and ask him, you know, once all of this is over. But there is something that I was like, this looks wrong for G2.
Yeah, the other thing but I would say
not,
is...
Not scared. Obviously. No, not scared for the title or for the final.
Sure. The only thing is, though, because if you think of the splits, right? So last year they had the split where Mad Lions beat them. I will point out to people again, guys, Mad Lions, that was still a 5-game series. Like, it wasn't like they got dusted off 3-0. And then obviously this year, they have looked almost unbeatable. Like, essentially, they do well in the regular split, fine. In the playoffs, no one could challenge them. No one was there. That's why, actually, it's so spicy to me that it's in the second round of the playoffs, they run straight into Fnatic in a BO3. So it's more winnable as well. Because here's the thing, Zabatine. That would be the wake-up call right there. Is if you lose that BO3 and you go to that lower bracket, look, I'd still take you to go to the final, still be an MSI, all that. It's all great. It's all good. But the issue I have is, I don't think until that moment you properly question yourself. Like, we've all heard the stories. Apparently they do just win all the scrims. They win against nearly everyone on stage. Even when they fuck around with experimental drafts. You know what? People might not like it when they give up like a Smolder or something to lose. But I'll tell you what, they're picking fucking Rek'Sai and stuff. Like, they're experimental. experiment themselves, boys. They're definitely having games where they're testing like what they can do and what's possible. So I certainly haven't had my faith shaken, but I also do feel like I've never really, this is why I hated LEC last split, mate. It's not that like G2 was the greatest team to ever play League of Legends. It's like when I was watching JDG last year, like, what are they doing? How could anyone beat them? No, no, last year it was, last split, it was like, why can't anyone challenge this team? Like, they're really good, but come on, there must be someone giving them a game. This time around, if they actually get their mental cracked, maybe finally we'll see that, because right now they should still win the split. But I've also never seen them tested. I've never seen them really pushed to the limit, you know? Because I do feel like it is those game fives, or it is when you're down two games in a series you thought you were going to win. Like, the fuck? That's when you have to go to your emergency draft, or you have to be cynical and band-aid and like, you know what, actually, we're not going to play through this lane, or you know what, go on to a dog champion. You know, until you get to that moment, I'll never really know if this was the bad moment, or if they were just fucking around, you know. It's hard to tell right now for me.
I mean, it's just the format that's BS, you know. At the end of the day, make us play. I mean, I think I repeat that every time I come on this show, but just, can I have 4 days of BO3s, please?
Yes.
Like, I just wanted to see.
Yes.
Like, if G2 Fnatic...
We would get so many answers for them, wouldn't we? We would get so many answers for BO3s, yes.
And you would see Carmine, yes. You'd probably see Carmine play better. You would see G2 play better. You'd see everybody play better. You would see more matches, more hype, like... There is really very low trade-off. Besides, like, I think I really like the take of Richard Lewis on of shortening the broadcast and kind of shrinking everything into a B1. It's like, you make your product for the people who don't care about it.
Yes, true.
And I think that's a very good take. I think that the people who really want
like,
to see...
Like, if people don't get it, the logic goes, if the person goes, but I don't want to watch all those matches, well, you're definitely the people who should be catering to them. We want people who want to watch League of Legends, so we're going to give you more. Yeah, you're right, aren't you? Because, by the way, exactly. I've always said it a million times over. You know when they say what they think is the gotcha? They go, yeah, but Thorin, that means that you have to watch Rogue against Jack. No, I don't! That's actually the game I will choose, like the LPL, to not watch. Guess what, Zabatine? You know, I talked about Milky Way. I don't watch when UP plays against fucking anyone's legend. You know what I mean? I watch when FPX plays fucking BLG or something. So in the same way, look, I would then watch less bad games, but I'll tell you what, I would watch every G2 Fnatic. I would watch every fucking, even like you say, even the ones you're interested in. Like, tell you what, let's actually see Carmine Cup play a full best of three when they win game one. Could they even keep it going in game two? Would they have won this year? These are the answers I want. I'd be locked into that, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like I think that after experimenting this for 2 years, I haven't heard anyone, a single person, say that it has a positive edge. I spoke with players, they're like, we're so frightened of losing.
Yes.
I think coaches have to go with cheesy drafts. Everybody's trying to optimize for the short term. The narratives that are told are very eerie because we don't have enough like sample size to make a decision. The splits are very short. The consequences for the career of the players are disastrous. I think that without this, the situation of Rogue and Carmine is a very good example of like how things can tumbled on from just having so much pressure on one single game. There is really no net positive. So as long as the format will be what it is, it will be impossible to say anything before the playoffs. And so the question comes is like, why is it even a regular season? If it doesn't help us conclude, but we're just dismissing two teams for the pleasure of it, of just not having one more BO3, you know, we could have a BO3 between Rogue, Rykno, and Carmine to decide who goes 9 or something.
Yes.
We don't have this, right? Like, starting in the loser bracket, we could have Rogue and Carmine waiting and being like one BO3 away of... But we dismiss them, and so we make this system extremely punishing, creating this very obnoxious meta for everyone. The content creators don't know what to conclude. The players don't know what to... That's just pure chaos for the sake of just having shuffles and upsets. But the league is not exciting for the people who care about the game when the shuffles and the upsets are generated artificially through a bad format.
Let's talk about Mad Lions. You know what? I've done a lot of my... Here's the things I'm saying. I've done a lot of my crowd on the other shows. I've got a lot of it out of my system. You know what? If you can imagine those first few episodes of somebody's, I was insufferable. You can imagine. It's me. It was my dream for them because I already thought that was like a semi-fraudulent finals run. And also... part of the run in the playoffs was people like Frescovi playing way better than I thought he was going to. You know, there's a term, it's a mathematical concept, guys. It's called regression to the mean. What it means is when you make a big enough sample size, you can have a big fluctuation, but it will come back to down what, to what the average is, the mean. It'll come down to what your average level is. And unfortunately, this is who the Frescovi guy is. You know what? The super guy might be saying crazy shit in interviews, like he's the greatest at every aspect of ADC. The joke is, like, has he just, like, had the wrong monitor plugged in? Like, oh, shit, I thought I was watching Ruler there. Oh, it's me. Oh, fuck, I'm the other guy. The joke is, he's like me in solo queue, where sometimes I would get lost on who I am in the team fight. Like, oh, I thought I was carrying it. Shit, I'm Pike. Why? Fuck, I thought I was the fucking Blitzcrank hooking him in. You know what you do that? Because I don't get at all. These are the two players I was harsh on. I just don't get why people who are Mad Lions, I get why you're a fan of Mad Lions, but I don't know why you think they're all amazing players, because I think you've seen this split. Last split, mate, this is why I know the Melzek guy killed it coaching-wise, because his team set up, the lane he played through, the players he did, how he drafted. It seemed like he had a very good sense, unlike a lot of other coaches, of who his team was and how to play for them. This split, a lot of that stuff just didn't work, mate. They just look worse. So the mid and AD looks worse, like... Across the board, there was problems in this team. Like, this is why I noticed when I did side select and we did like our sort of all LEC type rankings after the last split, a lot of us were umming and ahhing on like, who is the best support? Was it actually Alvaro? Was it Labrov? I think I went with Labrov at the end, but I was thinking I could go with Alvaro. The difference is, Mad Lions, when they can't just go through bot and then get ahead at the early game, they look like a very different team, mate. Like, right now, I have to say, first of all, they themselves, if it wasn't for Rogue and Carmine, could absolutely have missed playoffs in a normal split. They were right on the brink of that. And then secondly, now that they're going to be in the playoffs... Mate, I think there's a real chance this team can come last in the playoffs. Like, I'm not even hating when I say that. Like, I think they've got fundamental flaws. Like, their mid-game also looks trash to me. Where are you at on this team?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I would say it is normal. Like, I just say regression to the mean.
Sure,
I think we cannot be mean with players that come from ERLs. They're still doing better than Carmine.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's the only team that has four guys coming from the EME Masters final. Like, both teams have, like, most of their guys coming from this final of EME Masters. I think that the staff has assembled a bunch of guys that want to play together. Like SK, they have a play style that revolves around snowballing the early game. And like Bo, I think Eluya really likes to be the person who... He sees the game as attacking enemy jungle is the best thing you can do in the early game, which... is a take on the game. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Teams go very far with that, so it's completely viable strategy. But the expectation should not get blown out of the window because last split Fnatic and BDS shut the bed and MDK suddenly is like a top team in the LEC. It is a team that has a lot of flows, takes a lot of bad fights. They took bad fights and they weren't punished for them last year.
Yes.
Last split. And, you know, it's just like in chess, like a bad move is only bad if it's punished.
Yes.
So there is a lot of space that has been given to MDK and their flows hasn't really shown. This split, I think teams stepped up. I think Vitality has stepped up. Heretics is night and day. I wouldn't say Giantic is great, but I would say at least Vitality, Heretics, and Fnatic has stepped up. G2 is still, like, very strong. So obviously for a team that was middle-high of the pack, you can see this exact same effect to SK. Meta slowing down, not allowing proactive playstyle in the early game towards the bot side of the map, plus improvement of direct competitors that fit better because they have more well-rounded players that can play different playstyle, especially the scaling one, will take Mad Lions into a bad spot. That said, they're far better than the bottom two. Like, when you look at the last 2 days when they were playing for their lives, when they
put their brain off... Yeah, for sure.
Because they were taking 4v5, just limit testing.
Yes.
And that's bad, right? That's terrible, terrible decision making. But I understand MDK doing that here and there. They're like young players, and Eluya has always been like this kind of super keen on fighting player. But it is night and day if you compare Mad Lions and Carmine and Rogue. Night and day. Like, this team can still, like, I think they're playing Heretics. I can't guarantee Heretics is going to take it. So for this reason, I think they are where they should be. And I think hating on them for being where they should be because they've been better than where they should be is dishonest.
Sure.
So I'm fine with them. It's just I wish the hype lasted longer because it was super fun to watch.
Sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the problem this team has, and it seems obvious to me, is I don't think any of the top teams would lose to them right now in a series. Like, you look at it, they don't know what they do in the late game. Right now, they don't even always get the early game start. And then some of their players, like, fundamentally, they get gapped. Like, Fruškov gets gapped. I'm sorry, he just does. Like, he had that fucking Nico game that was like a war crime, mate. That was outrageous how bad that was.
He did a really good Ari game 2 days ago. So, I mean, it will be like this, right? You take players from EMEA. It's their first year. You're going to have good and bad games. I'm happy it works enough for them not to be ridiculous and you know, being mocked, because at least they dare to press their buttons.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when you look Carmine, like, just do what MDK does. Like, be accept. If you accept to lose the game, you might win it.
Yes.
If you just want to look not too bad losing a game, you will lose it 100%. And I respect Matt for doing that, but that clearly shows that this craze that has been around rookies the last 3 years by LEC managers and staff is a little overhyped. And the players that we know are good, when they make teams around good players that had a defined playstyle, usually does better. Like, Vitality does good. It's players that people don't know are good. People will end up playing Karzy or VTO or Photon because they don't know they are good players. But when you do a team with a lot of good players and you just throw a bunch of rookies from LFL or EMEA Masters into a team and you make the two teams face, usually it's the team with the good players that win. And that's the way it should be. Otherwise, it means the whole region is completely screwed.
Yes. Right, if we talk a bit about Heretics. By the way, I'll give myself, bear in mind, I completely inted it in the past splits with Carmine Corp, fucking XL last year, right, and Vitality before that. I've had some pretty bad calls in my time. It's not CS. I've learned that a long time ago. I've never said I'm an expert in League. What people don't know is I'm just really good at talking shit and I can just be entertaining around a conversation. So hence why these are talk shows, not all solo videos. But what I would say is this. One time, I'll give myself a rare pat on the back, is this is basically my prediction for Heretics was similar to what they are now. I actually said that the Zebru guy will come in. It's not that he'll be like what Perks was supposed to be. His job is just don't be Perks. Like my joke about you're not Dom. His job is just not don't be Perks. And then if you're just actually like vaguely serviceable, you'll win games. You just will. In fact, you've even seen like Jankos is back to his best. He looks fucking sick. You had the odd wonder game that looked good. By the way, Flakhead's just good the whole time. I actually think if you look at this squad, obviously Trimby was a really great upgrade. But here's the problem though, is when you look at this squad overall, and they do still look like they could contend. They could be a third, fourth team. They can maybe even if they do, if they really level up in the playoffs, they could even go to the final. One thing I think is excellent about this team is they do actually have some pretty good macro, actually. This is another example of where, guys, just because you hate fucking Perks, please stop pretending like Peter Dunn doesn't know how to coach. How many times does he have to do this? By the way, he, along with Mac, a guy who was his fucking protege, he's probably the best coach ever at like having a split first and then leveling up the next split. The guy just knows how to do it. He understands what to do. And so even though this was a tricky one because he's working with veterans, he's done it again. My problem is this, though. I think we talked about this on a past episode. My issue is this, though, Zabatine. I think too many of the Perks haters have skewed the narrative about this team. Like, I think the real change was Trimby joining this team. The Perks for Zebru one, the Zebru guy, he's all right. But here's the thing, mate. He's not some like super talent. Like, oh my God, it's just all right. He's even had some games that were a bit scuffed. I mean, Drew Fetz's first split, but I think that whole thing, people just got lost in the like, do you hate Perks? Do you love him? Thing. If you just look at the team, like, a part of me does sort of just think, what if Perks could have stayed and leveled up? You know, couldn't it have been an even better team? Maybe where are you at on the Heretics angle?
About Perks, I think that whoever thinks that this team wouldn't be as good with Perks is living in Wonderland. I think that although Perks has been slightly overrated in some parts of his game since his departure to C9, I still think he's a very good player and pretty consistent. And depending on the meta, like Italian, you think Perks can play Orianna the way Zweru has been? That's wonderful. Sure. Trimby, I mean, the change of support is something that I don't understand how people... I do understand why people undermine the impact of the support, because the only way to see it is through change, because there is no obvious criteria of what a support does outside of laning, right? So you can take... I'm going to take two previous examples that I usually take because they are the clearest ones. The first one is 2016. Yamato Cannon, I think, he's doing his rookie year as a coach, and he has his team called Splice. His support's name is Nisbet. First split, he was still like 2 splits per year. Goes into relegation. By chance, maintains into the LEC. Change only his support from Nisbet to Mikix. Goes to Worlds. 2016, goes to Worlds. So imagine the gap. So same player, different team. Do you remember Excel when they changed from EKX? When they kicked
they became immediately good. Yeah.
And Patrick felt like he was one of the best. So the impact of a good support is phenomenal. It's probably one of the roles since Riot has decided to hate on the fact that support would just be world machines, and they created all these stupid items that have like insane gold values, and they just spoon fed, you know, they're making foie gras with support, you know, feeding them golds. Supports have such an insane amount of golds for no reason, and if you have a good support that understands vision, tempo, and is good in lane, your team changes. And that's exactly what you see with Heretics. That's once again the wonder of, oh, suddenly everybody is good. Yeah, the man who needs to do the engage is doing. If you look at the game of Trimby with Thresh, how many hooks he lands to follow up on the next play. It's already a winning play, but it becomes an even more winning play because he does the next hook and the next hook and the next ward and the next contest. This is just endless. For instance, like, I think that one of the main problems of Karmine is the fact that Targamas is underperforming. Like, you change Targamas, you don't change anything. You put Trimby in Karmine, I think this team would be 10 times better. I think when Hillisung wasn't good, Vitality was bad. You cannot live. That's the lung of your... That's one of the main organ of a competitive team is the support. So Heretics is a good team. I think carry-wise, in a face-to-face with against the top four, it's going to be tough for their carries. Zwiru and Flakhead have shown struggle at the highest level, but their average is pretty high. Wunder hasn't shown any sign of being a carry, which is very smart, but it's not enough if your carries are going to be a little lackluster. So I think that Heretics is exactly where I thought they would be at the beginning of the year. That was exactly how I felt Heretics would be. If Kaiser was doing what he should do, and I didn't trust Kaiser on doing it because I don't think it's his playstyle, and so now they have a way more rounded playstyle, it's going to be a contender. I think it's scary for SK and Mad Lions and Giantix that no Heretics have the player they have. But I don't think that Fnatic, Vitality, G2, and BDS should be scared.
Here's the way I would put it if I'm going to do like a framing like you just did. What's cool is you have these four teams. You have G2 and Fnatic will just knock you the fuck out. But if you have Heretics and Vitality, if they can just get through the game, they will fucking win the late game. Like, these teams actually know that they can team fight, they can macro. It's actually cool. I'm with you though. The reason why, even though at the beginning of the split, because he did play bad and I heard some stuff behind the scenes, I was like, I'm okay with them finally benching Perks. That was because I wanted to give the Zwiru guy a chance. Maybe he's going to have some pop-off games. When I actually saw that we were kind of like lost it. And by the way, I even think Heretics technically would have been number one. They would have beaten G2 if he hadn't played that Orianna game you're referring to. Like, that was dog shit, mate. Like, if Perks could have even just played, he wouldn't have to, look, he doesn't have to be prime Perks, just be better than last split. Because how were you? The OP thing, what I'll about, just say, go on.
Sorry.
Go on.
Oh, sorry, I don't.
All right, I'll make it quick.
What about you don't sell VTO?
Well, I mean, can't go back in time with that one, but yeah, if you could get him back, it'd be a banger. Yes, of course, that would be, now that team would be insane, yes. No, the other thing I was going to say was this. This is where, you know what? I haven't done it yet on records. I haven't published the video, but I've got it ready. I'm going to do one on Humanoid. I'm going to do one on Self. I'm going to do a whole bunch of players where they're enigmas, Zippity. I'm going to go and find out behind the scenes using my skills and my connections. What was the story on these guys? Because obviously it can't just be in the game, in the server stuff. These people have some kind of social friction, or the people don't like something about their dynamic. So there's something going on with Trimby, bro, because he's done this on three teams now. He's been on Rogue and made them champions. He came to Fnatic, brought them back from the dead. They were in fucking Worlds and in the finals. And now he's come to this team, and suddenly they're a contender again, right? The whole time in the server, I thought he looked awesome. You look out the game, all the champion pool stuff. There has to be something that's going on socially with him and these teams, because I don't know how GMs are giving him to their opponents. You know that concept back in the day? It's like, if you want to leave G2, you can, but you have to go to LCS. You're not going to fucking Fnatic and beating me in the final. Bro, low-key, bearing in mind Jankos is back to his best. He looks fucking sick this split. They've just given Team Heretics, who right before this, they were stuck in that like mid-table, just all right team. You've given that team, a team that now has peak Jankos and fucking Trimby. Like, guys, that is going to be hard for some teams to deal with. I'm with you. They might not beat G2, but I'll tell you what, I will take them against anyone below them in the table. This team will be like fourth at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, they're really the gatekeeper, I feel like, because you need to have a strong jungle chip. I don't think that Dos and Isma have what it takes to answer. I don't think that Peach and Ignar, even though they are not bad, I think people underestimate a little bit Peach and Ignar on Giant X. I don't think that El Yoya and Alvaro, maybe El Yoya Alvaro, but I think the rest of the board is not as good as like Heretics or not as
And when they did play that one game, I will say Jankos fucking took El Yoya to school on that one like that. It was only a one-off game, but that was a pretty good one, boys. If you want to see a Jankos game, go watch that one.
So yeah, I feel like Heretics is a positive news overall for the LEC because it's not bad to have only failing projects. I wish we had a league with mostly winning projects.
Yes.
You know, Rogue, when we've into an experiment, it doesn't work. Okay, we'll see them next year. But overall, it's more exciting if teams are performing well. So I'm just looking at the rankings right now. I mean, they're 6-3. They're on the same score as like Fnatic, Vitality, and G2. They are really the gatekeeper. If you can't have like a well-rounded jungle support and three players that can just play League of Legends on an LEC level, you can't beat them. And they're going to be hard to beat even in playoffs because, guys, Jankos in playoff is a really annoying beast. Like, he will find edges and you're scared to play against this guy because he will do, like, the dodge vision thing is the best at it in the league historically.
Yep.
So I don't have the stock super high. I would say like buy it just eye close because there is a lot of limits, I think, so far in this team. But yeah, it's a team that is definitely not up there. And I would say, yeah, Vitality, if you wanted to have a top two, it's going to be Fnatic and G2. But Vitality, BDS and Heretics seem to be like the second wagon, right? These three teams can definitely compete. I'll put my stock a little higher on Vitality and BDS because I think they have players that have an improvement margin that's higher than the Heretics one, but on this very specific split, I don't sell a Heretic short. I think they can go far.
No, I'm with you. I will say the reason why for me they probably will end up being the fourth and just be the gatekeeper is it's really hard to win without a really good mid laner in the LEC, guys. Like, it's hard to make a final with someone who's kind of like the worst player in your team and's a bit scuffed. Like, so yeah, you might have the best jungle support. That's pretty. You're up there. You're there, but you also need the people who can do the kills and carry the game. Like, the whole point of that Orianna is that's supposed to look fucking sick when we get the going on this one. We're supposed to win the game. You get the MVP of the game after you do the fucking ult, mate. What are you doing? All right, what about this then? Do you know what's funny? For Giant X, they were a team where, funnily enough, people did lose hope in the lineup. And crucially, some people even were quite critical of firing the coach there as well. The Hidon guy, they were like, well, I'll tell you what, if people don't know what they did instead with the coaching staff, it's quite interesting. They took the Cass guy, who obviously used to be like under Mac, et cetera, and like Bad Lions or whatever it was a while back. So he knows the game. He's been an analyst for a while. And then they brought in Trick, the old Korean jungler that used to play for G2. By the way, that's even itself sort of a sleeper cool move because what I first thought when I saw that was, I think this Peach guy is useless, but I'll tell you what, if he's fucking Korean and he wants to learn jungle, bro, the joke of Trick is, they even all admit, Mythy, that Perks, Trick taught them shit about jungle, how it even works on the game. Every player that played him says he's like a teaching figure. I actually think this is a pretty good coaching staff change. If I look at the team, mate, look, you know the saying in English, you can't polish a turd. You can't make like a contender out of this lineup. Like, there's no combination of Lego blocks. There's no, you know, like, you can't give them these pieces and then them come up like oh, it's like a Lego Death Star. It's like, I only had a fucking piece of string, a button, an old teddy bear, a stick of chewing gum and four blocks. Like, I can't make a Death Star out of that. But consider what they have. I actually think the coaches have seen that they did a decent job with Giant X, mate. They weren't one of the worst teams. They actually were all right. All right.
I have to say, I think they did Hidden very dirty the way.
Sure.
If we are on the side of, I think they did Yamato dirty, which
yeah.
I think
you have to at least give the benefit of the doubt here, right?
Because when I look at the draft, they had the draft haven't changed. They're still like one day we try to draft like T1, the next day we try to draft like JDG. Okay. They haven't figured out their style. I think the players still think they're good at a style that doesn't fit them. I don't think they fixed the problem of Odoamne that seems completely lost in this roster. So I'd say all the kind of the blatant issues of this roster last split didn't really got offset by any other strength or fixed. I would say they are lucky that Mad Lions and SK didn't perform super well and like terrible teams of the team of the league has stayed terrible. I've seen some upsides in terms of organized play, like mid game Barons are slightly better. Some of the dives early game are good, but that would be tough towards Hidden to say that they were bad before because last summer split, I think Excel did good.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So at least he had like two splits and he got fired for And for me, it's a side grade.
Could also be like what we said with Yamato as well. To be fair, they're also taking what he did and he's loosened the jar in some ways. Like, it's not like his stuff goes out the window for what he did last split.
Yeah. So I'd say, for me, the problem is there is no identity for this team. That's not even the level. I'm going to be honest. I don't really care. Like, I'm not a huge...
No, of course. They're irrelevant.
Giants fan or anything. Course, you know, I don't have... So for me, it's just, can they produce a League of Legends that's different from any other team? So far, they can't. So sometimes they win because I don't think their players are like... They have Patrick, they have Odo. I think Jackie is doing decent. Peach is fine. Ignar is pretty good. I think people... I don't know why he's so underrated. Like, he won with Energy last year. That's it. That's all I have to say on Giantics. I don't really care. They're good. If they start playing a very specific play style that makes them unique the way MDK does, I'll start, you know, putting my nose into it and try to find how it works. But so far, they're just playing a kind of a lukewarm, wannabe T1 drafts, a play style that fails 90% of the time, but ends up making it to playoff because Rogue and Carmine exist. I'll pass on this one. I have no real opinion on GX.
I don't think they'll do anything in the playoffs. They'll come last place. And also, like you say, like, it's not even a sexy roster, mate. They don't even have some cool gimmick. They're just whatever. That's why I said, though, the thing for me is that they're just not the worst. That's all I can say. The best compliment is you're not the worst. That's it. And then move on.
Yeah.
Right, last team is SK. And here's the thing, Zabatine. As I pointed out, mate, if you're going to do as badly as SK did and have as many games that looked bad and have as many nightmare drafts where your coach looks like he's tearing his hair out, you couldn't have locked into a better fucking playoff matchup. Like, you've actually got a chance. You've got a chance to maybe do something here. The problem is, though, that has been what the story of SK the whole time for me. It's like, they have the games they look good and they have the games they look really fucking bad.
Dust is underperforming individually. We were speaking about supports and how the performance of a support can completely shift. Like, Dust has been night and day between spring and summer. Winter and spring. I end up like catching up on the fact that now we have three splits. I believe like this team is just hindered so much by the meta. The meta, like, you asking Exakic and Dust to play like Braum Smolder and Niski to play Orianna. So Isma is the only guy that can keep his champion from the spring, which are like Rell and Xin Zhao. And then you have the top lane that he does what he's good at, but they tried to invest on irrelevant early in the split. And this is something that people don't understand, is a good weak side jungle, a top laner, doesn't win you the game if you start just giving him Jace.
Sure.
Because the movements you do around the map are different, because when you're a carry top laner, your team collapses on you. Yes. Think about Alfari. The team collapses on Alfari and creates the fight. When you're a weak side top laner, you collapse towards your team. You collapse on the foreman. You cannot ask irrelevant, oh, by the way, you can play carries now because you're doing pretty well. And the four of the players are just going to learn to collapse on you. That's not how it works. Like, players have to learn. And even Irrelevant needs to learn how to call around his options to create a fight on his side of the map by preparing. Like, he needs to ask Dust to prepare a bridge of vision for the team to go on the vision to collapse on the enemy team. So this is very hard to establish in 2 weeks. And so SK is trapped in a meta where they have the choice between Zeri or Smolder because Varus is banned. And Exakic and Dust cannot impact the map at all. Dust has no good champion for himself in the meta. He tried Camille like in the tiebreak. It was horrendous, for instance. Niski can do what he can, but he's not a front-to-back carry. And getting pressure in early game is useless if you can't go towards your bot lane nor your top lane. And playing for the jungle on Isma doesn't work either. And Irrelevant is doing what he can too. So this team is trapped just because Riot Games decided to change the values on champions. Tomorrow, you add Caitlyn, you buff Caitlyn and I don't know, like Ashe, and suddenly SK is a good team again. They just have no options. They can't play.
Yeah, I know what you mean, by the way. If people have never watched, this is why when I used to hear people do the draft analysis, but without looking at the team and how they play in the region, I would get so mad only when they would tell Western players, LCS and LEC, you should just pick all the strongest carry top laners, like the Jace. Because if you ever watched the Jace in the LPL, or the old school example was Fiora, like, they used to absolutely fucking stomp the game if a good player got this. But as you're saying, Zabatine, this is why the other regions couldn't do it. They would just pick it for their top laner as though it was like a solo queue game and he just does what he wants. No, no. In the LPL, when they know they have the carry player, and especially when it gets rolling, the whole team, you're banned in the rest of the game. It's like you were saying before, trying to get a player on a carry jungler. The whole team has to know the rest of the game doesn't matter. This guy is going to carry the game. We play around this Fiora, this Jax, and we just go where he goes, and we go when he goes, and we go with him when he goes, and he is going to literally carry this fucking game. And if you've ever seen the really sick LPL top laners, they were fucking unbelievable at stomping games on these champions. Whereas you would draft it, and the joke is, I've even seen like on XL, they would draft like, or Rogue, they would draft like Odoamne, the same Jace, but they never ever played around him. And then they'd be sort of looking, I guess you're not a very good Jace player. You'd be like, he wasn't even playing the same game. What are you talking about? That'd be like taking Lewis Hamilton and throwing him in the worst car and just being like, why can't you win the race anymore? It's like, I haven't got any of the tools to do it. What am I supposed to do? So I do think that is so misunderstood. Like, that aspect is gone. Because yes, if you watch the last split, the most obvious thing is, bro, it's the irrelevant guy. This is the found gold. You might have like the best top player here, but he was the best at weak side. So in their world, when you can't go through extra kick, their logic is, well, let's give him some carry games. Yeah, but you've never played through that guy. You clearly don't know how to play the game I'm talking about. Like, and so at this point in time, you actually then just cap him, because now you give him like a false hope he's going to carry the game, you get some kills, then you don't do it, and you've just crushed your team identity. But I'm with you though. The problem is, that's the toughest part about SK. They had that one set of conditions in the last split that looked good, but when those are gone, they don't have a lot to fall back to. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have super versatile players. In fact, even someone like Niski plays much better in a certain meta in a certain style. Like you say, you don't want Niski to just be the trapped in lane Orianna player. That's not Niski's game. You're going to take away all of his intangibles and all the extra things he brings to a team if you do that.
Yeah, and the Akalis and the Sylas are not even viable anymore. Yep. So not only, like, if you think about SK, I think that not only Irrelevant doesn't know how to play strong side, but I think that Exarchic and Dos are pretty bad at playing weak side. So you lose both sides, you're telltale pretty much if you do that. So they have to play bot side. They can't go in skirmish. They can't go in early fights. They really have no options. And it would be absolutely stupid to ask, I don't know, why doesn't Isma just play a carry? It's like, let him learn, you know? It's like, he's not even... You look at Douglas in Vitality, he's surrounded probably by the most knowledgeable players of the region, among the most knowledgeable. He has one of the best staff, and you see, like, his improvement curve. I can't expect more from Isma. Like, that would be completely silly. So I think that everybody's doing their best in this roster.
Yeah, that's fair.
And they shouldn't give up on hope, but you know that they kind of a one-trick pony in terms of playstyle. That's so... If summer is all about bot lane, you're going to be like, wow, SK is popping off, Irrelevant is so good. And yeah, well, we'll see. I don't think they can reinvent themselves. They could change a player during the offseason, try to get like a super carry or like, I don't know. But I think the only real upgrade they had was Trimby. And
yeah, that's the real question, right? If you're SK, the what if is, what if we'd got Trimby, right? That could have been the game changer, especially because of the style of play had to be different. Yeah. I'm with you.
The team will be absolutely insane. Like, yes. I know Exarchic and Dos have been playing together for so much that I'm pretty sure like they don't even see bot lane outside of each other.
Yes.
But I'm pretty sure that if you give a guy as aggressive as Exarchic a support that likes to play for his laner, that could do wonders. And not to dismiss Dos, I think both of them play well, but they have been playing with handcuff this split. So I don't want to blame people too much.
Yes, okay, well, we don't want to blame people too much, therefore I'll stop talking.